Heart of the Matter, where we slice up today's divisive political issues into bite-sized portions.
In other words, we discuss the issues in such a way that even your husband can understand.
The thing that separates us from the animals is our ability to accessorize.
Heart of the Matter is hosted by the Americhicks.
The men will be so excited.
Financial columnist Molly Vogt. Former financial advisor and current city councilwoman Kim Monson.
Frankly, they're a little racy for me.
There isn't any room at the top for local girls like us.
Now, let's get to the heart of the matter on ATX Ask the Experts.
Hey, welcome to Heart of the Matter with the Americhicks. I'm Kim Munson here with my good friend Molly Vogt, and we are excited. We are going to be on live for 2 hours on Thursday afternoons. So welcome to some of you that might be surprised that we're on right now. We're surely happy to have you listen in with us. And if you're not familiar with the Americhicks, we will celebrate our three-year on-air anniversary this July. We love working with KLZ 560. And it's just really been a labor of love between Molly and I. But the Americhicks at Heart of the Matter look at three things, important issues and why they should be on your radar today. We're unpacking issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And then we're telling stories of real people experiencing real things. We're going to have an amazing story today of a woman who is a former Polish solidarity fighter. And it's an amazing conversation. So thank you for listening in. And how can they reach us, Molly?
Well, you can always reach us at 303-477-5600 when we're on live, but you may want to listen to some of our SoundClouds and podcasts as well if you happen to miss us. So check out our website, americhicks.com. They're all there. You can also listen live on 560 KLZ as well as on americhicks.com if you're listening at the right times. And in addition to us going to 2 hours on Thursdays now, we're also replaying our shows Thursday evenings, Saturday mornings, and Sunday evenings for now, and not only in Colorado, but also in Oregon and Alabama. So we're in a lot of different places, and we'd just love to hear from you. And please call us, and we'd love to hear what you have to say today.
Well, that's just great. And Molly, we have been doing a lot of research for this show. We sat down and worked out on our editorial calendar for the next few months, and as we looked at it, we thought, you know, we need to make sure people understand some of these big words that are being floated around out there. And of course, socialism, communism. This is one of the first times in America that we have an avowed socialist, Bernie Sanders, who's running for the Democratic presidential nomination, who is really getting a lot of support. And so because of that, we thought, you know, we need to understand what this is exactly. So I did some reading. Molly, I know that you've really been doing a lot of research, so tell me about that.
Well, you know, what really got me is I've been watching cars go by, and I feel the burn, Bernie Sanders for president, and I'm seeing all this about Bernie Sanders. I'm like, what? I thought it was, I'm like, okay, we know, you know, the people that are running as Republicans, we know the people that are running as Democrats, but then you've got this guy that's running as a socialist, as a Democratic socialist, Bernie Sanders, and people are actually putting his sticker on the car. And I said, okay, I'm going to figure out what is a socialist, how is that going to help us, what is behind his meaning, what does he want to do for us? He wants everybody to have nice cars. He wants everybody to have nice houses. He wants everybody to be, you know, really thriving and prosperous. And is that really what somebody like him with his ideas is going to do? And I started really digging into what is the difference and what is socialism versus communism? And actually, as I dug in, I said, wow, it's ironic what we've uncovered. And we'll share that today, of course, on the show. But it's ironic that people are putting a Bernie Sanders sticker on their car, because in order to do that, they've got to exercise their First Amendment right to free speech. And if Bernie Sanders becomes president, or any other socialist, and then will soon become a communist, comes into power, there will be no choice to choose what kind of sticker you want to put on your car or who you want to run for office for many different things, whether it be local or national. You won't be able to choose what car to drive or what color your car is. You won't be able to choose where to go to school, what education you have, what you're going to do for a living. You won't be able to choose your health care. You won't be able to choose a lot of different things. And so I started to think about the irony of people who have different colored cars and different kinds of cars that have Bernie Sanders stickers on them, considering he is a Democratic socialist and he tells everyone he is. So That's why I thought it was so important for us to get into this today. And I've gotten a lot of feedback for the add-in and the commercial leading up to the show. People saying they're really looking forward to it because, you know, I'm reading a bunch of books. Obviously, you and I both are. But one thing that I read that said that Karl Marx, who, you know, Karl Marx really came up with the idea, the ideal of socialism and communism and inequality for all. And the only way to get equality is to force everybody into equality.
Right.
And there's not a distinction there really between socialism and communism, but he said there are two phases of progress towards full communism. First is the transitional phase, under which old inequities would survive. So we still have some people earning more than others. We still have some people, you know, that are going to good schools and other people that aren't. And that survives, but the foundations to have that choice is being destroyed at the same time. And that's socialism. And that's our government coming up with regulations and putting people out of business and really taking away people's choices, which I've seen happen a lot over the past several years. And then the next phase, the second higher phase, is communism. And that's from that principle, from each according to his ability to each according to his needs. And that's not what America is about. We remember, you remember looking back at all the history books and all of our grandparents that were saying, we want equal work for equal pay. I'm not saying pay me for not doing as much as the next guy. I'm saying I can work just as hard no matter that I'm a woman versus a man or, you know, whatever the color of my skin is. I want equal work if I do, I want equal pay for equal work. But they're saying that doesn't count anymore with communism. It doesn't matter how much you work. Everything's going to be equal. And so that's socialism and communism, and they're actually tied in together. And one of the interesting things also, just to point out, and then let's move on, but the fact that Bernie Sanders says that he is a social democrat, that is also what Lenin said when he took over Russia. And as soon as he came to power, he changed his social democratic label to communist. And that is what we call the Leninist theory and the practice. And so just want to make sure that people say, well, socialism isn't exactly the same as communism. But Bernie Sanders is running as a democratic socialist. And that is what Lenin changed to communism. So they are one and the same. And it's worth talking about. And that's what we're going to do today.
Well, great research on that, Molly. And as you were reading a number of those books, I yesterday read The Communist Manifesto. I've never read that before. And it was astonishing to me what I learned in that. And it was actually very, very disheartening. Because in essence, it's all comes down to a class struggle. Everything is a class struggle. And they never talk about what the ruling class will be once the proletariat does a revolution against the bourgeoisie. And I find that interesting because that's where these elites think that they're going to fill in the blanks as far as leadership. And But that's never addressed from what I could see in the Communist Manifesto. But as we were preparing for this, I thought, you know, I'm just going to get out the dictionary and see what they say about socialism. And so socialism, it says, is a theory or system of social organization that advocates the vesting of ownership and control of the means of production and distribution of capital, land, etc. in the community as a whole. So Molly, to your point, people that are driving around with Bernie Sanders stickers, I understand how, you know, young students, that, you know, they're kind of being sold that this might be a good idea. And so, you know, when I see a student with that on their car, I'm kind of like, well, you know, idealistic, maybe needs to dig a little further. But when I see adults, middle-aged adults driving around with that on their car, it's a real head-scratcher to me. So then the next thing is, how does socialism relate to communism? And in Marxist theory, and this is what you highlighted, the stage following capitalism in the transition of a society to communism is characterized by the imperfect implementation of collectivist principles. And then that leads to totalitarianism. And do you have any thoughts on that, Mal?
Well, one thing I want to add, that you were just reading the Communist Manifesto, and they have it summed up in one single sentence, the theory of communist, abolition of all private property. And the only way to get rid of all private property is if everybody agrees to give up everything they own by choice, which I doubt people are going to do, or by force. And when you talk about totalitarianism, well, then you're looking at Adolf Hitler. You're looking at Joseph Stalin. You're looking at Mao. You're looking at these people who came in. they took property away from the people. They forced them to work, you know, particular jobs, particular number of hours, and really, you know, took away all of their goods. That means that one person's in charge, and he tells you by force what to do. And he puts together armies that are going to stand beside you in your work, at your home, everywhere you are, to make sure that you're doing what they tell you to do. The sad thing is that the idea of socialism and communism is these people are proponents of equality. They think they're a special group of people on a mission that are here to ensure equality of outcome, not equality of choice, not equality of being treated the same under the law, which is what our founders did during the American Revolution when they said we are equal in the eyes of the Lord, or if you don't believe in the Lord, we are equal in the eyes of nature. We are all equal because we're all human, and that makes us different than beasts. That makes us different than animals. It makes us different than gods or angels or spirits or whatever. We're equal in that sense, and we need to be treated equally that way. And if we protect our private property rights, people are going to work hard to advance themselves, and no government should hold them down. And we're very unique in America that we were able to do that. America was like this level playing field for everybody around the world. You know, when in Europe and all these other areas, if you were born into a class, you were either royalty or you were a peasant, and there was no way to get from one point to another. So I could see at that point how people would say, we want people to have an equal opportunity. Well, and in America, everybody was the same because it didn't matter if you were royalty or not. We're facing the same hunger and Indians and wilderness and the same, you know, diseases and everything here in America. And we were kind of all the same. And it gave us the opportunity to try. We all had the same equal opportunity to try. It wasn't guaranteeing that we weren't going to have a father or a mother that was prone to some disease and our neighbor wasn't prone to the same disease. It didn't say that your parents wouldn't become alcoholics and maybe your life's going to be a little bit harder in the beginning than somebody else. No, the outcome's not promised to you. But you being equal in the eyes of the law and of nature is promised to you in America. And so when I look at these people and they say it's their moral duty, like Bernie Sanders, to make sure that we all have equal outcomes, and I say, how are you going to provide an equal outcome? The only way to do it is going to be by force. And if we start to be forced to be equal here, I think that looking at history, which we're going to do today, mm-hmm. and talking to people who've been through the socialist communist regimes, know that if we're going to be equal, that means that they're going to knock everybody down. The smartest, the hardest working people are going to be knocked down. If we're lucky, that means that everything's taken away from you and you're sitting in a line working on an assembly line like everybody else, not making any more money. If you're not lucky and it looks like Nazi Germany or North Korea or somewhere else, the smartest people, the hardest working people, the people who want to achieve the most will be put into a camp and hidden away. And that will make us all equal because the smarter people will no longer be in the market.
Well, Molly, great point. And when we come back, we're going to go over the numbers of just how many deaths of each of these dictators, these tyrannical socialists, communists. So when we come back, we'll give you those numbers.
A place to call home. Home is where the heart is. There's no place like home. Karen Levine has been helping individuals buy and sell their homes for the last 25 years. And she's a true pro. Kim Munson here. I've known Karen Levine for over 25 years. I'd like to say we met in kindergarten. However, we're a little older than that. Award-winning Karen Levine appreciates how personal your home is, and she helps people on both the buy and sell sides. She understands the real estate market and has the experience to help you navigate the crazy ups and downs of real estate these days. She's honest, she's trustworthy, and she has your best interests in mind. Give Karen a call at 303-877-7516 or check out her website at karen-levine.com and be sure to tell her the Americhick sent you.
Hey, welcome back to The Heart of the Matter with the Americhicks. Molly Vogt and Kim Munson here. We are getting to the heart of the matter this show on socialism and communism. And we're super excited that we've got a two-hour show for the rest of our lives, and it starts today. So no longer we just 2 to 3, now we're 1 to 3. And then, of course, you can hear us again Thursday night, Saturday morning, and Sunday night. So we're pretty excited about that. Before we went to break, Kim was asking me what is totalitarianism, and I was kind of going off a little bit on communism, and I didn't actually answer the question. I want to make sure I do that, and then, Greg, we're going to go to you on the phone. But totalitarianism is a centralized government that does not allow, they don't tolerate parties of differing opinion. So there's no Republican versus Democrat versus Green Party versus Independent versus Social Democrat versus anything, right?
Right.
Bernie Sanders is a Democratic Socialist. If he comes to power, and you compare him to totalitarians and other social democrats, which is what they call themselves, but then, of course, they became communist, Hitler, Mao, Lenin, all these guys. That means they are the only ones in power. No one is allowed to speak against them. So that person that I've passed with that Bernie sticker, Sanders, that's going to be the only sticker you ever have on your car, because you're never going to be allowed to have another party sticker on your car. You can't meet with people and talk about different ideas. You can't talk about different groups like that. Totalitarianism means there's one central government, and they do not allow you to talk about any others.
So, Molly, are you saying that it's actually a dichotomy to have a Bernie Sanders sticker on your car and a tolerance sticker on your car? They don't match up, do they?
They do not match up.
Okay.
We'll get even into more detail as to how they don't match up, because Bernie Sanders is the type who believes in, I'd say white supremacy, but we'll get back to that, because he wants to close off trade with other communities, other countries, and actually believes that we do a little bit too much with Latin America and with Asia, and so that we should just be doing business on our own, as our own, which really reminds me a lot of Hitler and makes me more nervous.
And we are getting, Greg, hold on one second. Did we lose him, or is he still there? Okay. Okay, great. Greg, hold on one second, because I just wanted to make a point. This is not actually just about Bernie Sanders, Molly.
No, it's not.
Because,
but his stickers is the reason that it came to light. If people are talking about socialism, this is so great. But at the same time, there are a lot of different things that are taking place that people are voting for and cheering for that are pushing us towards socialism anyways, like single-payer health care, like, you know, minimum wage requirements, things like that. So we're already going socialism. We've been going towards socialism in this country for a while, definitely over the past 7 years, a lot more than anything. But the fact that people are now admitting it and saying that they're for it makes us say, you know what, we need to do a show on this, and we need to really dig down and say, what happens? What is the idea behind it? Maybe the idea isn't so bad that you say that you want to help people and you want them to be equal, but what happens is the implementation is the damaging part, and the results. And when they take away your private property, which they have to achieve their equality for the world, then that means you have no more rights any longer. And I just think it's important to make sure people know that.
Good job on that, Molly. So, hey, Greg, thanks for holding on. What's on your mind? Greg, are you there?
Hello. Yeah. Hi, I'm sorry. I was talking to the other guy. I'm so glad you made that point about the legitimacy of socialism, because all Bernie Sanders really has is a faulty principle of socialism. And I want to say that a lot of times this discussion about socialism gets bogged down in the world of its experimental use after Karl Marx. But before the world got to digest what Marx had to say, socialism was already well known through its employment through other totalitarian governments and kings, mainly, is what a king is, a totalitarian leader many oftentimes, even if he's benevolent.
Right.
And so what he had said was socialism, communism, and protectionism were three versions of the very same thing on a different line of progression. So I would like to just say, and that's why I wanted to call when you first started mentioning the definition, that people need to be careful, because actually trade restrictions and free market restrictions are the first huge entree for socialism into our government. And at a point, they become something that the status quo or ruling class not only relies on for their power, but resists the change of.
Well, Greg, that's a really excellent point. Thanks for making that. We appreciate the call, and we appreciate you listening to Heart of the Matter with the Americhicks. So thanks so much. Okay, Molly, with this, I wanted to go over the numbers. You had talked about Mao and Communist China and some of these totalitarian socialist or communist dictators. And when I did my paper for Leadership Program of the Rockies, I actually started it off with what stands between men like these and the citizen of the United States of America. And basically, it's the Constitution of the United States of America and the vision of the Declaration. But Molly, Mao Zedong, Communist China, is responsible for anywhere from 49 million to 78 million deaths.
Right. He's the number one mass murderer in the 20th century.
Right.
Mao, China.
And the reason they can't say exactly is, you know, they just don't know for sure. But at least 49 million people died under his vision for this utopian society. And then Joseph Stalin comes in next with 40 million to 60 million deaths. Adolf Hitler, Nazi Germany, 17 million to 20 million. Pol Pot in Cambodia, which was the killing fields, 1.7 million people lost their lives. However, Molly, the population of Cambodia was only 5 million. And then Kim Il-sung in North Korea is responsible for 1.6 million deaths. And so the point that you made regarding this particular socialism, communism, is you used the word force. And as I looked at the Communist Manifesto yesterday, it is right in there that people will have to be forced to adhere to these ideas. That is antithetical to the fabulous document that we have, the Constitution of the United States of America. And there is a big difference. And so the idea that we have people that are really touting Bernie Sanders, who's an avowed socialist, who is really giving Hillary Clinton a run for her money in Iowa right now in the polls, is astounding to me. And so Hillary Clinton, in response to that, is running further to the left. And then in the background, we have three others that I think are on the forefront of the Democratic Party, who all, again, espouse socialist values. And that's Elizabeth Warren, senator from Massachusetts, and then the Castro brothers, the twins, Juan, who is now the head of HUD, Housing and Urban Development, and Joaquin, who is a congressman from Texas. And so it is very important that people watch closely what is going on with each of these particular people. And then you sent some information which made me do a little bit more research regarding there is a Congressional Progressive Caucus, and it is the largest membership organization within the Democratic Congressional Caucus in the United States. It has 69 declared members, and it's described as a left-leaning organization that works to advance progressive and liberal issues and positions. Progressive is another word for socialist.
It is. And, you know, one of the things that, because you're mentioning Mao, and we're talking about the deaths that came from these communist totalitarian leaders. Mao, yes, he had anywhere, they don't know the total number, but I have some numbers that were listed in my research under the different social programs that Mao put forward saying that he wanted to help the people. And of course, next week we're going to come on and we're going to talk a little bit more about social programs that are taking place in America and have been taking place here, like FDR's New Deal, Lyndon Johnson's Great Society. We have, you know, affirmative action, minimum wage, free medical service, all these things under the guise that we are going to help with equality, which we think means we're going to bring up the poor. But in reality, when you look at what happened in all these other countries, it actually knocked down everybody to a point of death, starvation, ruin. And Mao's, just two of his quick social programs. One was the Great Leap Forward. This was to rapidly industrialize China. Everybody had to make steel at their house. They had to use whatever was laying around in their house. Sometimes you're using cooking supplies. They had no money to survive, no money coming in. 20 million deaths just from this one program alone. Supposedly, they were going to have this great leap forward, right? Also, under Mao in China, you had the Cultural Revolution 5 years later that killed somewhere between, it says, 40,000 to 70,000 people. Then you've got the 100 Flowers Movement under Mao, where he asked people to come forward and tell him, tell me, what do you think? What do you want the party to do? You know, we encourage you to share your knowledge with us. He persecuted 500,000 of those people because they were dangerous thinkers sharing their ideas. So, yes, when you look at these leaders, these communist leaders who killed millions of their own people under the guise of equality for all, I think it's worth looking at the social programs they had put into place and the social equality that they said that they were trying to share with everybody. They think they are moral people. They're in charge of making us all moral, and nobody's allowed to think any differently than they do. So that Bernie Sanders sticker on your car, if he comes into office, may be the last time you're allowed to buy a sticker to put on your car to stand for any politician. Just saying.
Well, and Molly, that's a good point. We're going to bite this off into a deeper depth next week, because when you look at what's happening regarding freedom of speech, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, all those things are so important. The First Amendment, Second Amendment, actually all of the Bill of Rights is so important for the individual. It protects the individual against a totalitarian government. And the idea that we are having politicians, in fact, just this last Tuesday night, stand before the American people and make the case to get rid of the Second Amendment, or to actually just start to take steps to additionally chip away at it, is astounding. And you've really been on this, Molly, and I know that it really has been on your heart. You've been really concerned about the American people, and that's one of the reasons why we do this show, is because we think it's so important to bring these issues forward with all the, without all of the rant and the rhetoric. So now we are going to be moving into the next hour and a half of this show. And Molly, we have three amazing things that are going to happen during the show. We have a surprise guest that is supposed to be calling in here in a couple of minutes. And in fact, I think he's on the line. And so we'll have him on the line in just a moment. And then you had mentioned to me, could we get an interview with somebody that lived under socialism or communism? So we put our thinking caps on. I reached out to a friend of mine who connected me with a woman from Poland who was a fighter in the Solidarity movement there. And so we did tape that conversation. We'll have that on after our surprise guest. And then John Andrews, who is just a well-respected, good friend. I mean, former president of the Colorado Senate, founder of the Western Conservative Summit, really has an understanding of what's going on in Colorado regarding a movement towards socialism. So we'll have him on as well. So it is an amazing show. But at this point, I would like to invite on our special guest. Our special guest or surprise guest is David Horowitz, and he is famous. He is an author. He is a speaker. And you've probably seen him maybe on Nightline, Crossfire, Today, Hannity and Combs, The O'Reilly Factor, Good Morning America. He has spoken at over 300 colleges and universities, and he gives interviews yearly to radio and television. And we are honored, David, that you are on Heart of the Matter with the AmeriChicks. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing pretty good.
Okay, well, great. Well, we are so excited to have you. And somehow I was going through things as Molly and I were preparing for the show this week. And, of course, I know of you because you're famous. And I was trying to find my Communist Manifesto, which I read yesterday. But in going through my books, I had two little booklets that you have written. One is Barack Obama's Rules for Revolution, and the other is From Shadow Party to Shadow Government. And so over the next 25 minutes or so, I'd love to have you explain the rules for revolution and also what's going on with George Soros. So which one would you like to talk about first?
Well, George Soros.
Okay.
Hates America. He's a man who is a criminal. He has a guilty conscience for being he makes his money by speculation and currency manipulation, and I think his books have been burned in Russia. I mean, I'm not for book burning, but it shows you there's a bad odor even there. That's because of what he did after the Berlin Wall fell in stealing money from Russia, from the Russian economy. He sells his conscience. He said he wants to be the conscience of the world. Get that. And you do that on the left. The left forgives you anything. Child molestation, murder, sees mass murdering drug dealers as victims, as Sean Penn has recently demonstrated. That's what Soros said. What Soros has done that we should really be worried about is he's put together on the left what I call a communist left, because their agendas are the same as the communists. Something I know, having grown up in a communist movement. What Soros has done is he's put together a coalition of billionaires, street thugs, racists, and leftists. He has this thing called the Democracy Alliance, which I think he's raising like $50 million a year for 501c3s, which are political organizations that are tax exempt. There's nobody on the right that does this. There's no individual. And of course, Soros has a collection of billionaires who do this. There's no collection of billionaires on the right that's fighting war over America.
David, let me just ask you a question, though, because the left always brings up the Koch brothers. So how would you say they compare with Soros?
The Koch brothers are the first conservative billionaires willing to allow their reputations to be shredded by the left. Now, look, now the left, as you probably know, it lives and dies by slander. It has slandered every Republican in sight. If you want to see how the left thinks, you can go up to salon.com, which is a wretched magazine, but it's a very big website, and just read the titles of the articles, and you'll see that every single Republican is identified as a lunatic, a bigot, a racist, and so forth and so on.
Well, David Horowitz, we have David Horowitz on the line here. And in your little booklet, From Shadow Party to Shadow Government, and I guess I also want to make sure that people know that you actually were on the left, and then you have moved over.
Oh, I was brought up by communists. Everybody in my community as a youngster wanted Stalin to win the Cold War and America to become a Soviet satellite. And these were all progressives. That's what they called themselves. And, they looked like very decent people. Their politics were just really screwed up. I should tell your audience, I have a website. It's called discoverthenetworks.org. You can get there by going to my main website, which is frontpagemag.com, but discoverthenetworks.org is an encyclopedia of the left. And you can type in the search engine Shadow Party or Soros and get all this information in great detail.
You know, David Horowitz, Kim Munson here again. I think that Molly and I have actually printed that off, and the number of organizations that Soros is involved in and supporting from a financial standpoint was about 12 or 14 pages when I printed it off. Is that?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
The left is very integrated. It's got, we used to call ourselves the hydra-headed monster, where you create these organizations with nice-sounding names like peace and justice. But your agenda is always the same. It's to create a totalitarian America in which the government decides who gets what.
Now, David, why?
I wrote a book, I should say, called The New Leviathan.
Okay.
I'm sure he has a chapter on Colorado and the blueprint for Colorado.
Uh-huh.
When they turned it blue. It's called The New Leviathan, and it's about this universe of 501c3s, that's tax-exempt nonprofits, that are engaged in politics. And it shows that, for example, like on border issues, the left has outfunds the right by 1,000 to 1, and I'm not making that up. I there are charts in this book, The New Leviathan. I wrote it with Jacob Laxon. It's unfortunate that conservatives are so slow to understand that we're in a war. That book, I wrote it for the conservatives and Republicans, and they failed to take it up in a way that would get it, that a lot of people would know about it. But the left, the money in this country is on the side of the left. By a factor, in terms of just the foundations, the funding agencies of 10 to 1.
You know, David, another thing that Molly and I had taken a look at is if you look at the website Open Secrets and put in heavy hitters, it shows, you know, the top spending on political campaigns. And I think 8 out of the top 10 is all goes to Democrats. And I think 6 out of the top 10 are unions.
And then there's what Republicans fund, Planned Parenthood. It's a political organization. It's buying ads for Democratic candidates. PBS and NPR. These are government media that's entirely funded by the taxpayer and entirely controlled by the left. Promotes, black terrorists like the Black Panther Party. I'm sure your listeners are familiar with NPR and PBS. How is it possible that government money was used to fund a left-wing organization? It's a, billion-dollar operation.
Well, it
the
is.
Answer
a,
is
oh, go ahead.
Conservatives
sorry.
Have been asleep. I have a 501c3. We're called the David Horowitz Freedom Center. It's the only conservative 501c3 known to me whose sole purpose is to educate conservatives for the political war. It's about political war. The left is always geared up for war. That's why they want to destroy us. They destroy individuals. They destroy their reputations. They want to take them out of the battle. That's the mentality. I wrote an article called Treasons of the Democrats in Front Page Mag recently. And one of the people who in the comments section put it to me, I never heard it so perfectly put. Republicans are always looking for the perfect candidate, while Democrats are always looking for the perfect lie.
Wow.
That sums it up. And that's why do they lie? Why do they lie all the time and deny the obvious? I mean, their campaigns are basically, like the wage gap for women. It doesn't exist. If women earn 22 cents less on the dollar for the same skills and the same work as men, then every smart businessman would fire all his male employees and hire women and increase his profits 22%. It doesn't happen because it's not true.
Right.
But the Democrats run on it. That's
right. Right. And what this is Molly. David, thank you so much for joining us.
Why are they... conservatives' jaws are always dropping.
Yeah.
How can anybody do this? How can anybody defend a racist movement at war with law enforcement like Black Lives Matter?
Yeah, and I've got a question for you, David, on that, too.
The answer is that all these progressives think they're creating a new world of social justice where everybody is equal and everybody's taken care of. And that justifies the means. It justifies any lie.
Yeah, so David, the people that are telling us that we should agree with socialism, that we should put these people into place, that we should back socialism and communism, support the ideas, we should start to grow government because that's the only way to make people equal in this country, a lot of these people... many people here are very familiar with communism, are very familiar, had families who possibly died in the Holocaust, who lived under Hitler's Germany, who lived under Stalin, whose ancestors and grandparents did. And they're familiar with how terrible that works out. They're familiar with the fact that the idea and the ideal sounds great, but never in history has it ever worked out good for the people. Instead, it has always resulted in millions and millions of deaths and poverty and sickness for people. So why do you think in America, with people knowing this, they still keep going back to these ideas thinking that they're going to be able to implement it differently than Hitler or Mao or Stalin did?
They don't think about implementation. They think they're smarter than everybody. They don't think. It's a religion. It's replaced Christianity and Judaism. All of these isms, Nazism and communism, which are twins, grew up or developed as organized religion declined. They're about salvation. They're about a fallen world. I mean, the difference is a true Christian believes that the only being that can save us is a divine one, which is correct, since people are responsible for these problems. Whereas progressives believe that salvation comes through them and their power through the state. So the problem with socialism is, one, you lose your freedom, and two, it doesn't work, so everybody becomes poor.
So
during the Cold War, the Soviet Union existed for, what was it, 70 years. Name me one product that you bought or would buy or that was in the international marketplace from Russia, except caviar and maybe oil. They produced nothing. They stole the technologies. Communism, socialism do not work. That's the other problem with them. And all of this is in this little booklet I did called Barack Obama's Rules for Revolution, which probably also you can get right off my website at frontpagemag.com.
And I read that yesterday, David, and it is really fascinating. I think what we'll do is we'll go to break, because next I would like to talk a little bit about the Alinsky model, which you highlighted in this Rules for Revolution. And so let's go to break so that we will not be interrupted, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about this little booklet that you have done that I think is a very important read for everyone.
Running water. We love it when we choose when it runs, not so much when it chooses when to run. Recently, a friend related a water story. He was cooking breakfast on a Saturday morning when his 4-year-old sloshed through the kitchen, leaving wet footprints from his soaked slippers. "What happened?" asked his dad. "The toilet's not working," replied the 4-year-old. They clearly needed the experts at First Choice Plumbing. Kim Munson here. I've worked with First Choice Plumbing for years. They're honest, reliable, and they do terrific work. Whether an emergency, new install, or plumbing repairs, First Choice Plumbing are the pros to call. Serving the South Metro, Northern Douglas County, and surrounding areas, call First Choice Plumbing at 303-841-1448 and tell them the Americhick sent you.
Numbers, numbers, numbers.
Well, numbers are a big part of everyday life. We're all busy building our businesses, taking care of our families, and trying to fit in a little free time. Kim Munson here. We need a trusted company to help us navigate the numbers. That's why the Americhicks work with Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company is a full-service accounting firm that's been helping individuals, businesses, nonprofits, public companies, trusts, and estates navigate the numbers for 25 years. Their website is dpredovich.com. That's dpredovich.com. Or give them a call at 303-791-3000 for a no-charge, no-obligation appointment and tell them the Americhick sent you.
Munson here with my good friend Molly Vogt. We're getting to the heart of the matter regarding socialism and communism. We've got an amazing show today. And of course, Molly, we're very excited that this is our first day for 2 hours on Thursdays. We were on the air for 2 hours on Sundays for several years, but really excited to be doing this and really appreciate the partnership with Crawford Broadcasting on this. So with that, we have David Horowitz on the line with us. And David is a most impressive individual. He speaks at colleges and universities throughout the country. He's appeared on many of the, you know, Nightline, Crossfire, Today, lots of different shows, and he yearly gives radio interviews. And so, Molly, we're really excited to have him on the line with us. And interestingly enough, I was looking at his bio. He considered himself a red diaper baby. So, David, just explain to people what a red diaper baby is, and then we'll talk about your booklet, Rules for Revolution.
You know, my parents were card-carrying communists, just like Barack Obama's and David Axelrod's and Valerie Jarrett's. Those are the three most important people running this country.
How did you make the change then? Because you are now a conservative, right?
Well, to make it very, very brief, I was editing the largest magazine on the left when the Black Panthers murdered my friend, a woman who had worked for me, and the whole left defended them. And then when the left what the left had worked for throughout the 60s was to make America lose the war in Vietnam, withdraw, and abandon our Vietnamese allies. And when that happened, the communists proceeded to slaughter 2.5 million people with no protest from the left. And the whole Democratic leadership is proud. Oh, yeah, the Secretary of State is like our president, a traitor, who betrayed America at that time. He invented atrocities that he never saw and knew nothing about. It didn't happen to help the movement to force America's withdrawal. And that when I saw all the people that were murdered by the friends of the left, I knew I was in an evil movement and I had to do something about it. And I know that Barack Obama is still, all of those causes are still dear to his heart, because if they weren't, and he knew that he was involved in an evil movement, the first thing he would want to do is to warn other people. But he never has. He neither has Valerie Jarrett, who is the power behind this world.
Oh, David.
So things are grimmer than people think.
Wow.
And you asked me about the Alinsky model. It's really simple. It can be summed up in a three-letter word, lie. Well, Alinsky, when I was on the left, you know, one thing you can say about the 60s left, of course it was anti-American and anti-capitalist and so forth, but at least it was honest about its agendas. It said, we want, you know, our slogans were things like, we want a revolution and we want it now. Alinsky, who was around at the time, was very upset with the new left because they told the truth. Because when you say we want a revolution and we want it now, Americans don't want a revolution and they don't want it now. So you lose. You can't telegraph your agendas. You have to lie about your agendas. That's really the whole Alinsky rules for radicals. I mean, there are other things everybody's familiar with, you know, freeze the opponent and so forth, and demonize them and attack them. But the basic thing is the system needs to be burned down, but don't say that. What you say, what you do is you join the Democratic Party, and that's what Alinsky did. He, you know, became friends with Cesar Chavez and Bobby Kennedy, and infiltrated the Democratic Party, which is now a party of the radical left. The Democratic Party's agendas are defeat America abroad, give nuclear weapons to our worst enemy, the Nazis in Tehran, who killed thousands of Americans, bankrupt the economy, and redistribute income to their friends. Now, that's the Democratic Party program.
David,
you know, let me just say one thing. I mean, I know there are a lot of people. First of all, I'm aware of Donald Trump's flaws. But what this guy has done is to burst this bubble. We call it political correctness. It's really the Communist Party line. And he has taken on these sacred cows. We're the only country in the world that doesn't have and certainly the only major country that doesn't have a border. Where terrorists and criminals can just pour into the country and collect welfare checks. And even if we throw a few of them out, they can come back over and over again and kill people. That's the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is these sanctuary cities. These are treasonous city administrators because they have pledged not to cooperate with the Department of Homeland Security, not to enforce our immigration laws. They're traitors. The Democratic Party, I don't know the exact number. There are over 350 of these cities. I'll warrant you every single one is a city the Democratic Party controls. But I can guarantee you more than 300 are.
Yeah.
So it's New York and San Francisco and Chicago. You just go on and on and on. The Democrats control these cities. That's why they're treasonous.
Now, David, I have to ask you.
And I am sick and tired of Republicans who walk on eggshells, you know, when they're attacking each other the way Jeb Bush is attacking Marco Rubio. It's a bloodfest. It's vicious. When they're talking about Democrats, it's very polite. They don't see the reality. What other Republican besides Trump would be willing to burst Hillary's bubble and go for her jugular? That she colluded with Clinton in the rapes of these women and the abuse of these women.
Now, David, I've got to ask you a question, though, because, you know, many of our listeners are women who, I mean, they're busy with their families, they're taking care of their kids. And what you describe, you know, it's antithetical to what they're hearing from, you know, leaders. And so the question would be, you know, they're going to say to me when you put forth this information is, why would the people that are on the far left of the Democratic Party, why would they do this? Because don't they care about us? I mean, why would they do this to citizens of the United States? Because I think that women driving around taking care of their kids, they don't understand. I mean, why would they do that?
They do it because they don't care about you or me or the women taking care of their kids. You know, look at just the Black Lives Matter movement. What has been the result of that movement, which 46% of Democrats support? What's been the result of it is a crime wave. In Baltimore, the homicide rate is up 60%. It's record-setting records. The same thing is true in the St. Louis, Ferguson area. What they've done is they disarmed the police, and it's open hunting season on innocent people. And who do you think those people are? They're Black. They're in the inner cities. Why aren't Republicans shouting this from the rooftops? Every major inner city in America is 100% controlled by the Democratic Party and has been for 50 to 100 years. Everything that's wrong with those cities, the policy can affect Democrats and progressives are responsible for. But Republicans are too polite to mention it. They don't care about America. How could they care about America and want to have thousands, tens of thousands of Syrians who will not be vetted? There's no vetting process. If there were a vetting process, the shooter who came from Pakistan, the wife, would never have been let into this country. There is no vetting process. Democrats and progressives defend criminals at home and our enemies abroad. The President of the United States has just given nuclear weapons to America's mortal enemy. These are Nazis. They're Jew haters. They're Christian haters. They're atheist haters. And they have killed thousands of Americans. Every wounded warrior you see on TV, every single one of them was blown up by an Iranian-supplied IED. And the President of the United States is kissing the Iranian butts and humiliating us. And then he goes on in his State of the Union and says, everything is great.
Hey, David.
I long for politicians like Trump who will, it's like, you know, the Emperor Has No Clothes story, who will blurt out the truth, blurt it out. Go for the jugular. That's what Democrats do. Yeah. I mean, Barack Obama has compared Republicans to terrorists.
Hey, David.
That's what he's done. And then he gets up and lectures us on that there should be civility in politics. Hillary Clinton has called Republicans the Taliban.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of Hillary Clinton, since you bring her up, I've been looking at this thesis that she wrote in college in 1969 on the Alinsky model. And I've heard that she was a dear friend and follower of Saul Alinsky during those days. And so it seems to me like she's doing the exact same thing when he says, don't tell them your real intentions. The means to the end are okay. It's okay to hurt, kill, destroy the lives of thousands or millions if you have to. If the ultimate goal is power for the political party and supposed social and income equality for all. And so it's interesting that you said that about Saul Alinsky and what George Soros is doing and what President Obama is doing, because I see that Hillary Clinton's doing the same thing. And I think that our listeners should go ahead and Google that. Google Hillary Rodham Clinton's analysis of the Alinsky model, because Sal Alinsky's Rules for the Revolution has been read and studied by many of those people who were trying to take our rights away. And some of those people are running for office right now. So it's a very important time to pay attention to what Sal Alinsky said.
Yeah. Hey, David, we are out of time. Thank you so much. Now, how can people get information about your website? Where should they go?
Just go to funpagemagazine.com, or you can Google my name and it'll come up. And it's all up there. You can get access to everything. And the navigation bar, it says who we are.
Fantastic.
Tells the mission of the center and all the things we do.
Okay, David Horowitz, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time this afternoon. And keep up the good work and keep up the good writing. We greatly appreciate it and have a great day.
So very interesting. Interesting guy, David Horowitz, and he's got several books out. Everybody, I'd say go take a look at him because it's definitely worth thinking about and talking about, and especially somebody who was raised in a communist home and was raised to believe that there should be big government to knock everybody down, who all of a sudden says, you know what, maybe it's not right that we all need to be knocked down. Maybe we should have free choice, too. Check out David Horowitz. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, welcome to Heart of the Matter with the AmeriChicks. I'm Kim Munson here with my good buddy Molly Vogt. We are in our second hour, and we wanted to let you know, Heart of the Matter with the AmeriChicks, we talk about important issues, why they should be on your radar today, looking at things as right versus wrong instead of right versus left, and we are sharing stories of real people that have had real experiences. So we thank you for listening and joining the conversation. Molly, how can people reach us?
Hey, give us a call, 303-477-5600. And you can always check us out, our website, our Facebook or Twitter at AmeriChicks, and email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. We're going to play something for you now, and we'll be back in about half an hour. But we want you to tune in and listen to this interview.
Fantastic. This is a woman, Yavika, who is a friend of a friend of mine. She lives in the United States now. She was a fighter in the Solidarity movement in Poland in the 80s, and this is a fascinating conversation. She's at work today, so we taped it last night, and I think that you'll learn a lot about what happens to people living under communism.
Well, we are so excited to talk with you because, Yadvika, you have some experience with socialism and communism, right?
Yes. I was born in Poland under communist government and lived there for 40 years before I came to United States.
So tell me about that. What was life like in Poland?
Probably will be a little hard to say. I will say this way, that when I was living there, I knew I wasn't free, but I didn't know really how freedom looks like, and then I saw here. But life was, government was everywhere. Government decided about everything. Government decided where you live, how you live, most of the time even what do you eat, where you work, how much money you make. It was just everywhere. And my family was a little unusual. Both parents were members of the Home Army in the time of Second World War. And so they were always in opposition to the socialist government pushed on us by Russia. And they taught me and my brothers, true history or whatever they could to teach us that what we were learning at school was not totally true. So I learned to have a double life. But the kind like a shadow or some cloud over everybody all the time. The shock I had when I came to United States and I saw people walking with heads up and, smiling, laughing. We usually had heads down and we were trying to be quiet and try to be almost invisible so nobody catch us and you know, when people like me or my parents, we were not members of the Communist Party, we were considered enemies, and wow. So we had to be quiet and really careful to whom we talk. You don't know in a communist or socialist society, you don't know who will betray you and who will denounce you. You have to be extremely careful. And if you want to talk a little, something like against the government, that's really, dangerous. And if you talk with somebody, you have to be absolutely sure that this person will not denounce you.
Okay. Well, this is really interesting. Let's go back just a little bit, though. How long did you live in Poland before you came to America?
40 years. I was 40 when I 40 years old when I came to the United States in 1985, 15th of November. So I just had 30 years in the United States as a free person.
Well, that is very exciting. And tell me about that, because you said you were involved in the Solidarity Movement, which
yes.
That was an amazing time in the world between Pope John Paul,
yes.
The second Ronald Reagan, and Margaret Thatcher.
Yes.
You know, that all came together and, is it Lech Walesa? Was that how you
yes.
say that?
Yes.
He was
Lech Walesa and Ania Valentinovich. These two people, I was closer to Ania Valentinovich, but Lech Wałęsa was officially the head of the Solidarity Movement. And I was in Wrocław, so in Wrocław we were a little more, I don't know how to say it, we were a little better maybe organized and a little farther going into the fight with the government. So in Wrocław, started Cornel Morawiecki. It was the main man. He started fighting Solidarity. It was a part of the Solidarity Movement, but with the task of protecting demonstrations on the streets, because when people went, you know, some demonstration on the street, there was tear gas and some paramilitary cars or whatever, not really tanks, but close on the streets, and some people died. So Fighting Solidarity was made to protect these people, so we were kind of like ready to die first. And of course, we had another task to print leaflets, booklets, you know, the postcards, whatever was possible, some books too, and I had a few printing shops. And I was a printer too, and then I taught some my boys, as I call them. You know, I was close to 40 at this time. They were like 19, 18, 20. So they were my boys, and I taught them how to print. And then, but you had to steal somewhere paper to get the paper. You could not buy, and you know the screen to put the leaflets on, and it was screen printing. So I had this printing shops, and then some boys were arrested. Some went into hunger strike in prison, and then the police was very, very, very close to me. And I didn't want to be arrested because I was very sick at this time, and I was poisoned by the by the chemicals I used for the screen print, for making screens. And so we thought that maybe be good to leave Poland. For a while, I didn't think for such a long time. I thought for a while and see if I can talk about what's going on in Poland here and if I have to die as a free person. Because otherwise, if they would arrest me, I would go on a hunger strike for the political prisoner status and then I will die. So there was actually kind of like a choice to die as a free person or to die in a prison. And I thought, okay, it could be as a free person. So that's what I did. I left on November 15, 1985. I left my son, 15 years old, in Poland with my parents. And we just, okay, we'll see what happened next.
And now, did you ever, were you able to see your parents and your son again?
Yeah, my son is here. He came he came 2 years later, and okay. President Reagan helped me a lot.
Okay. Well, that's welcome. I'm glad you're here. And what a woman of courage you are, although it sounds like there was a lot of courage going on over there in Poland
yes.
at that time.
Oh, yes.
Now, tell me, when you were a child, initially, Poland, if I remember right, it's they kind of call it it's almost a battlefield in Europe. I mean, everybody wants Poland. Yeah.
That's playground. It's Norman Davis, the best history of Poland, God's playground. And, it's a battlefield.
So Germany, had invaded Poland
right.
in World War II. Then after the war ended, the Russians took over in Poland, right?
Yeah, not exactly. It was Germany started invaded Poland on September 1st, 1939. September 17, Russia attacked Poland from east.
Okay.
It was Molotov Ribbentrop pact they had, and they divided Poland between them.
Okay. Now, though, after the war, did Russia have all of Poland, or was it still divided?
All Poland.
Okay.
Russians went to Berlin. So that's why East Germany was under, communist.
Okay.
So Russia was walking, like Russian troops were walking, army through Poland, establishing wherever, whenever they went and through Germans out, from the cities, they established a communist regime there. So it wasn't like we had a choice, we were liberated and now we have a choice to establish our government. No. It was, we went from the German occupation under Russia occupation.
Okay. Now, under Russian socialism, communism, and do you feel both those terms are pretty closely connected?
Yeah, we were taught that socialism is the step to the communism, that communism is this pink utopia where everybody will have everything and nobody will be pushed to work. This is like, I don't know, dream of the crazy person. But if somebody doesn't have to work, nobody will work,
Mm-hmm.
You have to work to, and we were created to work. And it's, socialism is like a step to the full communism. I don't know if ever absolutely full communism was developed, probably under Mao and in China, where many millions of people had to be killed. But under socialism, communism, whatever you call it, everything belongs to the government. You don't have, let's say, apartment like here. that's your home, but it belongs to government, not to you. And they are almost now is different, but there were not private stores. Mm-hmm. Everything belonged to government. Schools, everything belongs to government. Only place where we could feel a little bit free was a church.
Mm-hmm.
In church, and you know, John Paul II, he taught us a lot about our dignity, because what communism does, it destroys your dignity as a person. I was taught at school all the time that I meant less than zero.
Oh my gosh.
As a person, as a single person, I meant less than zero. My world was in a community. That's why I'm sick and tired when I hear everywhere community. Here now is just community. That's the teaching of the your world is in your community. How much you put into community?
Wow.
Yeah.
That is really. I hear that all the time. I'm on city council, and I. For my community, and
yeah.
I actually hear that term a lot, and I find that fascinating what you just enlightened us with on that. Now, you had said when we had talked earlier that everything was free, though. There was free healthcare, free schools, free
yeah.
communications, but what was the quality of the healthcare, the schools, and all those things?
Terrible. Terrible. And you know, I wasn't young, so when I went to school, they were kind of like a beginnings. When I started elementary school, they were beginnings of their work, you know, of the communist work in education. So part of the curriculum was still from the time before war, which in Poland was very, very high. And so we were taught a lot, you know, good stuff like geography, but the history was destroyed. The old history, like ancient, you know, the Greek and Romans
mm-hmm.
and all this stuff, it was absolutely beautiful. And I think nobody here in America is taught as much as we were taught. And as much as I know from this time, but the new history was skewed into socialist history. So the Lenin, Marx, Lenin, Stalin, you know, they were like
mm-hmm.
gods, and in every school room on their portraits on the walls, religion was you know, always kind of like pushed. That only stupid people believe in something. But in a Polish language, Polish literature, it depended on a teacher. When teacher was strong enough to push Lila and teach us literature, you know, like Polish writers, you know, Sienkiewicz
mm-hmm.
with the Quo Vadis and all the stuff, if they taught us, there was always under, we felt like not everything is clean here. We don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We were taught, I remember, about the United States and capitalism, that that's the worst thing which can happen to the humanity. Socialism and communism are the best. And it was funny. I was in a grade school when we had a problem with this potato beets,
mm-hmm.
and I remember a leaflet with the what we were told that American imperialists were flying over Poland and. Throwing the potato beets from the airplanes on a tiny tiny little.
Did you guys believe that?
As a child, I believed, and you know, and we were taken to the potato fields, and we had to pick up these beets. So I saw the beets. So you know, when teacher said that, but then when I was a little older, and we talk at home, my mom was laughing, and she said, "No, that's not true. It's just you know." Every disaster was the reason of the American imperialism. Mm. Everything what was good was the reason of, even weather, you know, like global warming.
Okay. Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Now, a couple of different thoughts that I wanted to hit on here. We're going to be running out of time here a little bit, but one of those is you had talked about that nobody paid taxes. The government... What, did they give everybody some money, but it was very difficult to find work?
Yes. Yeah, it was much easier if you were a member of the Communist Party. So a lot of people just sign it to be a member to have a little easier life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be really communist, but to have a little easier life. But then they were prohibited from going to the church, and you know most Polish people are Roman Catholics.
Okay.
And so that was a problem. My family never signed it. I never signed it, and I had few really big fights with some people. Okay, you can have a job, but you have to sign. And I said no. Okay, you don't have a job, and the system was we were paid cash once a month, and you have to stand in line or whatever to get this money at the administration of your work, and we never, even if we were looking for the job, we never, okay, how much my work is going to be worth. And then, let's say like here, then the taxes are deducted. No, it was, okay, you are going to have, let's say, 2,000 zlotys per month for your job. And we never knew how much really our work was worth. And then when Solidarity started, then we got some hands on some documents and some stuff, because, you know, government did what government wanted to do. We had nothing to say. We found that the taxes were between 85, in some places 82 to 90%. So it's kind of like terrible, of course. Another thing was we didn't have unemployment, because when people were looking for work, and especially when they signed to be member of the Communist Party, the jobs were divided. Let's say I had 8 hours job, and then they brought somebody else. And so two people did the same job, sometimes three, sometimes later four. So we were kind of like pretending that we are working, because we didn't have so much to do. And the money was, you know, the pay was barely covering what we absolutely had to have. Mm-hmm. To survive. So we had a saying that, you know, government pretends that they pay us, and we pretend that we work. But it's very dehumanizing and destroying the dignity of the person, if you feel like, you know, I'm sitting here pretending that I'm working for 6 hours, but right. Then when I get money, I received the money. I didn't know what to do with them, because when I paid the rent and I paid, you know, electricity and whatever else I had to pay, I had a very little left to buy food, and most of the time nothing left to buy some clothing. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like you can go to the store and you had a choice what to buy, what kind of blouse or sweater. No, it was just few things, and you bought what you had to buy.
Well, I think you said earlier that you had to go to different places for your vegetables, for your bread, for your milk, and you stood in line in all these places.
Yes. Yeah, they were. We didn't have the supermarkets. Now they are in Poland, but at this time we didn't have supermarkets. We had, let's say, store where we had bread, milk, you know, that like the main grocery. But vegetables were in a different store, meat in a different store, you know, the shampoo and all this stuff in a different store. So after work, when actually we had to do shopping like almost every day because we didn't have the fridges like here. We had this tiny little, you know, under the counter. So you had to stay in line to buy piece of meat, stay in line to buy bread, stay in line to buy something else, and then it was always standing in line.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that there was, and I saw this regarding Venezuela, that toilet paper was...
We didn't.
There was no toilet paper, and that's a pretty important thing.
Well, I know. You know, I heard, I listened on the radio... top show, of course, and it was Dennis Prager said, I think he said some time ago, that one of the signs of the communism in a country, communist government, is the they don't have a toilet paper, which happens in Venezuela right now. I don't know why, but it's impossible. And sometimes we were lucky that some stores received toilet paper. So, of course, people were standing in line, you know, over a block long to get a few rolls of the toilet paper. But it was dark brown and kind like sandpaper. I was lucky once I bought 50 tomes, you know, 50 books. Uh-huh. They were all writings of Lenin.
Yeah.
On a beautiful paper, thin, very good paper. So I bought these 50 books. And we had it at home in a powder room to use as a...
Yannika, that's funny. That is very funny. Yes. Now, I want to ask, so regarding these different places that you went to get, say, bread or milk or whatever, when you went to the bread store, did you have all the choices that we have, or what was that like?
No, there were few choices, always few choices. When once a while you could find the private bakery, you know, they baked something and they sold. So then lines were crazy and, you know, people were there trying to buy. But in a government store, there were two or three choices but still you had to stay in line to get. So when I came to America and I saw the choices, I thought first that it's like too hard for people to make a choice. You know?
Well, and share your experience the first time you went to an American supermarket.
Yeah, that was in Chicago because I landed in Chicago, my aeroplane, you know, so you have to stay wherever your food touches free soil. So I was there for 8 months, and first time I went to the supermarket in Chicago, I think I spent an hour just walking around. I didn't buy, you know, nothing, but I walked around, and I ended up crying like a baby in a toilet paper aisle because, that, you know, 30 years ago it was... I would say even more toilet paper than now. They were in a different colors, like pink, yellow, blue. I saw some were with some perfume added, and I looked at this and I thought, why, you know, people in Poland fighting so hard through the history to be free. We see nothing like this. And I thought, what in America people did to deserve something like that. I felt like, you know, and another thing, we had this food carts in Poland at this time that you could buy so many eggs or you know, pound of meat per person per month or something like this. And my son was over 10, so we didn't have for chocolate or candy. So he didn't have it, you know, 10 years old boy. He wanted something. And I saw so many types of chocolate and fruits. And if I may, when my son came here, he was 17 when he came to United States, and then it was his 17, and he came in the middle of the week, and by the end of the week, I went with him to the grocery store, to the supermarket, and I told him that I saved $80, and I told him that we'll buy anything he wants. So what he put, bananas and different fruits, toilet paper. I told him I have for half a year, but he didn't believe me. He said, it's here, we have to buy because tomorrow could be, you know, empty shelves. So we bought fruits, we bought toilet paper, and we bought a different type of chocolate. And first time he saw white chocolate. So, and then he was sick, of course.
Because he never had that much before. So
no.
Now, just one last thought, running out of time, but you had some great comments about, Jawika, do you see any correlation with what's going on in America to what you experienced in Poland?
Yes. And it scares me to death. It's everywhere. And when I came 30 years ago, I saw very strongly some signs, and it was just like when I learned about Social Security and some other stuff. I said, "This is not right. This is not the role of the government. Government shouldn't be in this, in that, in something else." But you know, now it's just like everywhere. And Bernie Sanders, when I see the you know, Bernie 2016 or something on the car, it's just like, are you stupid? What are you thinking? He keeps talking about free stuff. Nothing is free. So what? Teachers at the college will teach for free? They are slaves? We want them to be slaves? No, somebody has to pay. So it's just like everywhere. And one thing, you know, some people called me that I need to the mental hospital because when Barack Obama was the first time trying to be a president and in 2008, and I listened to his speeches, and one day I said, I heard the speeches before, exactly the same speeches in Polish and in Russian. They were the same phrases. They were the same promises. Exactly the same, and I heard them. And now, after 7 years, and he's still promising some, like, I don't know, star on the sky. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. You have to work. You have to be. You have to be careful about freedom, about promises. We need somebody who takes the constitution in the hand and say, this is the best document. You know, Poland had a constitution almost the same as the United States Constitution a long time ago, 2 years after American Constitution. But then Poland was divided and between, you know, Austria, Germany, and Russia, and didn't exist for over 100 years. But the Constitution is such a document that if somebody holds in the hand and reads everything, government shouldn't be in the healthcare, government shouldn't be in education. This is not education anymore. That's indoctrination. They are teaching that communism is very good and capitalism is bad. It's not.
So what would your advice be to America today?
Listen, pray, of course, and or maybe first pray, listen to what the candidates are saying and don't believe in anything free. Nothing is free. And when somebody can give you something for free, it means they took from somebody else. That's one thing. Another thing, if they give you something for free, that means they can take from you everything what you have. And the Second Amendment, First Amendment, freedom of religion. I don't know if you caught this, but we are not talking about freedom of religion anymore. We are talking about freedom of worship. That's such
good
a
point.
Huge... Yes.
It's a big difference. It's a big difference.
Of course, freedom of worship, you can go into the church and you can worship inside. Then you walk outside and you don't have a freedom anymore.
And that's what you experienced in Poland.
Exactly. We were free inside the church. You know, they were secret police was, they arrested me in a cathedral in Wrocław. They took me from both sides, you know, under two arms, and we walked out. But they walked me out. But still, we felt at least partially free in the church. But outside, you step outside and you are not free anymore. So here, you know, it's just like, okay, freedom of worship. What does it mean? When I believe, my life, my whole life, I live according to my faith. I cannot live different life, all right? So this is totally, you know, beyond comprehension.
but you do have hope.
I have. My guy is Cruz, and Ted Cruz, and I believe that he have a chance to help all of us to turn America around. It's the last place on earth where people can be free. Where in the world you have people risking their life to get to some country? It's only United States. There is no other country in the world where people try to do everything possible to get to this country. So we have to protect. We have to turn around and go back to the Constitution and to the freedom.
Yadvika, on that note, thank you so much. This has just been a great conversation. We'll talk with you again, and thank you for sharing your story.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you so much, Kim Munson here with Molly Vogt, and that was our new best friend, Jadwiga. She is a Polish solidarity fighter and really a very informed woman. I really appreciated her perspective on that, Molly.
I think it's very interesting to hear somebody who's actually lived under socialism, communism, come to America and tell you, here's exactly what I saw, and here's how scary and terrible it is, and you are headed that way now with the policies that you're allowing these elected leaders that you elect to put into place. A warning from somebody who knows the truth is huge, so I'm just very thankful that we got to hear from her. So thank you, Kim, for reaching out to her. We'd love to hear other personal stories as well.
Absolutely. Now we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we have John Andrews in studio with us, and we're going to be talking about socialism and communism and his new book and things going on in Colorado. So stay tuned.
A place to call home. Home is where the heart is. There's no place like home. Karen Levine has been helping individuals buy and sell their homes for the last 25 years, and she's a true pro. Kim Munson here. I've known Karen Levine for over 25 years. I'd like to say we met in kindergarten. However, we're a little older than that. Award-winning Karen Levine appreciates how personal your home is, and she helps people on both the buy and sell sides. She understands the real estate market and has the experience to help you navigate the crazy ups and downs of real estate these days. She's honest, she's trustworthy, and she has your best interests in mind. Give Karen a call at 303-877-7516 or check out her website at karen-levine.com and be sure to tell her the AmeriChick sent you. Relationships matter. It's important to work with reputable companies and reputable people. Kim Munson here. I've worked with First Choice Plumbing for years. They're honest and reliable. Recently, the First Choice team helped us with our lawn sprinkler system. First Choice arrived and fixed the problem. Their 24/7 emergency service, 100% satisfaction guarantee, quality work can be trusted.
I know because I work with them for years. Serving the South Metro, Northern Douglas County, and surrounding areas, call First Choice Plumbing at 303-841-1448 and tell them the Americhick sent you.
Numbers, numbers, numbers.
Oh, numbers are a big part of everyday life. We're all busy building our businesses, taking care of our families, and trying to fit in a little free time. Kim Munson here. We need a trusted company to help us navigate the numbers. That's why the Americhicks work with Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company is a full-service accounting firm that's been helping individuals, businesses, nonprofits, public companies, trusts, and estates navigate the numbers for 25 years. Their website is dpredovich.com. That's dpredovich.com. Or give them a call at 303-791-3000 for a no-charge, no-obligation appointment and tell them the Americhick sent you.
Welcome back to Heart of the Matter. I'm Kim Munson here with my good buddy, Molly Vogt. We are the Americhicks, and you can call us at 303-477-5600, and you can check out our website. We have all of our podcasts there, and we are excited. We're back live. That was an excellent interview with Yavika, and but we're back live, and we have John Andrews in studio with us. And John Andrews is a pretty famous guy here in Colorado. He's the former president of the Colorado Senate, the founder of the Western Conservative Summit, and he is an author of a new book, Backbone Colorado USA. So, John, welcome.
Well, Molly and Kim, it's great to be with you this afternoon. I've been a fan of the show since you got your start on Sunday afternoons here at KLZ, and happy to see you migrate into the work week and now expanding again to 2 hours with repeat broadcasts. And your message to thoughtful women, women involved in the lives of their families, in their careers, in their communities, women who are tired of some of the same old political partisan rhetoric. I think you're doing important work, and I'm happy to have a chance to talk with your listeners this afternoon.
Well, it's great to have you here. Now, John, you really have been in the forefront of this kind of this battle, this ideological battle that's been going on in Colorado for quite some time. And Molly and I feel that Colorado is really at the tip of the spear, the tip of the spear. So in today we're talking about socialism, what that means to people. So what do you see here in Colorado?
Socialism, to begin with, is poison in a sugar pill. It sounds so good, as you have laid out. And honestly, what an informative program that you've had today. I've had a chance to listen to most of it and getting ready to be here with you for the final few minutes. But as you laid out so well, there are the promises of enough for everybody and fairness and equal treatment of all, and nobody has more. Nobody has to envy what the other person has. You don't have to worry about basic needs. It all sounds great. The price is paid, as your guest Jadwiga has said firsthand from communist Poland, and as David Horowitz so eloquently spelled out from his observation of the international socialist communist leftist movement and his having grown up in a communist American family. The price is paid in freedom, in opportunity, in individuality, in people being jammed into a mold, people being deprived of the right to believe or think or follow God according to the dictates of their own conscience. Socialism is poison and a sugar pill. Communism is just that with steroids. And need we fear that if Bernie Sanders' point of view were in the White House, America becomes communist Poland tomorrow? No. But we would have slid down a slippery slope that America has already slid down too far. We would have gone much further. Colorado has been a seesaw over the 40 years that I've been involved in politics here in the state. And at times it's been the left in charge. Other times, those who say freedom, individual responsibility, constitutional limited government, markets work better than the command economy. We've had our opportunity. Colorado has been a swing state really the entire time that I've been on the playing field here, and all the more so now. There were years when it didn't go Democrat for president very often. Now Obama has carried it twice. And any list of the states that are going to determine the next president in 2016, the 5, 6, 7 swing states has got Colorado on that list. So we've got to really think carefully about what system delivers its promises, not just the one that promises great things, but what is the proven track record? That's what I like about the historical frame of reference that the two of you have presented in this afternoon's program and the real-world testimony that you've gotten from people who've been in the thick of it, like David Horowitz or Jadwiga from Communist Poland. We've got to take a look at what really works and what delivers. Ultimately, what delivers in my experience in all these years in Colorado politics, which is captured a lot of it in my new book, Backbone Colorado USA, is limited government, market economics, private property, rule of law, freedom of thought, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, the right to criticize the government. Imagine being spied on, even in your churches, as was the case in Jadwiga's experience in Communist Poland in the Solidarity movement. I looked around, and after 7 years working at Colorado Christian University, establishing a policy think tank there, the Centennial Institute, and creating one of the largest national conferences for those who believe in freedom, the Western Conservative Summit, and I didn't see a book that readily explains how freedom works in Colorado and what would it look like if Colorado did more with freedom, more with personal responsibility, more with private property, more with a market economy rather than a command economy. And this book is a collection of short, quick takes of mine written over the course of 10 years, but a lot of them read just as though they were written yesterday, about the whole range of issues, national, international, culture wars, economics, education, transportation, environment, energy.
Well, John, this sounds like a great book. You gave it to me the other day, and I have not had time to really get into that. But for that busy mom that is, you know, maybe driving kids around, and she wants to get an understanding of many of these important issues, it sounds like these little essays would be a great way to go at that.
I call it a bowl of political popcorn, Kim. That is to say, you can nibble on it. You can read it straight through, and it wouldn't take that long, 280 pages. But at the same time, there's a page and a half essays, about 120 of them collected here, across the whole spectrum of issues. There's a big debate starting in the state legislature this week and going on for the next 4 months about what to do with our tax dollars. How big is big enough on the state budget? What about the constitutional protection that we're so fortunate to have here in Colorado, the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, which, unfortunately, a bipartisan alliance of Republicans and Democrats with a lot of big special interest money behind them don't want our Taxpayer Bill of Rights to protect us on taxes and spending as it does here in Colorado. They hope the legislature will ignore the Constitution and hold back money that rightfully should be refunded to taxpayers from overpayments. And if that won't work, they hope the people themselves will vote this fall on the ballot to say, never mind asking our permission when you want government to grow faster than population and inflation. Just go ahead and let it grow. Colorado is the only state in the country where we need to be, as taxpayers and citizens, we need to be asked our permission. Can government grow faster than the private sector economy? And sadly, dangerously, there's this coalition that wants us to vote that away. Essentially, they're saying, vote away your vote. I'm going to be doing everything I can to encourage people to think very carefully and turn that down. And the background on that battle over our Taxpayers' Bill of Rights is laid out in short, easily digested and shared little articles in my collection, Backbone Colorado USA.
And where can people buy the book?
It's right there on Amazon.com. It's available in paperback, as you and I have it in front of us right here at this moment, but also available for Kindle on an electronic reader. Anybody that would like to buy it that way and have me personalize a little book plate that you can put in the front of your copy of Backbone Colorado USA for your own library, or if you want to give this as a gift. And let me say, it's written to be very accessible to a thoughtful high school student or the kind of college students that I've been working with over at Colorado Christian University. Kim, you and Tom have been great friends to what we've done over at Colorado Christian University. Molly, you've been involved in our programs over there. So this is a great gift for kids, too. I'd be glad to personalize the book for anyone that buys it through Amazon, and then they can be in touch with me through Facebook or Twitter or my personal email, andrewsjk@aol.com, and I'll make sure it gets a personal signature.
Well, I think that that's really great.
That's awesome. I can't wait to read it. John, as the president of the Colorado Senate, obviously you saw these types of issues and bills come forward all the time, over and over and over, some that were going to push us down the wrong road, that you had to make important decisions and votes against so that you could protect the people, protect their taxes, protect their dollars and their health care and their education. And it's interesting, of course, right now we know as the Colorado legislature is just getting started, we have people that are going to try to take away the rights of the people to vote on what the government can do with their money. Are there any other issues that you know ahead of time or coming down the pike that we should be paying attention to? Busy moms, you know, we don't have time to get down to the legislature and vote on everything and call our legislators all the time and go down and testify. But are there some big issues coming down this year that you think would be important for us to pay attention to here in Colorado?
I hope Heart of the Matter listeners will inform themselves about what makes for good schools in your neighborhood, in your community. Some of the states and localities that spend the most per pupil on students have the poorest academic performance. On the other hand, there are states and localities that are in the middle or even perhaps the lower third of the spending rankings where the healthy home culture and encouragement of parents for their children to learn and study and work hard and the smart programming and curriculum in schools and a lesser influence of teacher unions has added up to making public education work much better without just throwing a lot of money at it. There's a big, big push coming in the state legislature right now in Colorado in the winter of 2016. Got to spend a lot more money on public schools, say they, even though the money that we have been spending, and nationally we have tripled the real per pupil spending in America since the 1970s, and test scores are flat. So insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. It's time that we educate smarter and not just more expensively in America, and specifically here in Colorado. This is a pitched battle that is coming, and I see lots of families, lots of moms and homemakers that are going to be ultimately cheated by public education lobbies that say, pay us more, pay us more, pay us more, and then they're constantly moving the goalposts with lower expectations of what children will learn.
Well, and John, the implication is that if we spend more, that money is going to go to the student and into the classroom. But that's not true.
Well, Colorado has one of the worst rankings in the country about what percentage of the dollar ever gets into the classroom as measured by the classroom facility plus the salary of teachers in front of a class of, let's say, 26, 28 students on average. Something like 53% of the education dollar in Colorado gets siphoned off before it ever reaches the classroom into administrative overhead and extras that we shouldn't have to be paying for so lavishly. That's another big theme of my book, Backbone Colorado USA, is the public school and particularly parental choice education wars in Colorado over the years. We're so blessed to have Douglas County as a test experience for what happens when you offer more opportunity and choice. We would be offering even more if the courts would clear it, and the U.S. Supreme Court may indeed say scholarship vouchers are good for Douglas County, Colorado under the Constitution. We need to be paying more attention to that, and this is all spelled out again in my book.
Well, great. And Molly and I had Nicholas Simmons on recently, who is a vice principal at Success Harlem Academy East, or in Harlem anyway.
A charter school?
It's a charter school. Same building. And their kids are proficient, and the kids in the public school on the first floor are not. So, John, unfortunately, the time has gone so quickly. We have just had a really jam-packed show of great information. But we would really like to have you back, because Colorado is at the tip of the spear, the tip of the spear. And what that busy mom needs to do, she needs to listen to Heart of the Matter once a week. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then we need to be talking to our friends and our family. We need to understand these issues and be able to talk to each other in calm voices. I know David was pretty.
Not exactly fiery. Mr. Calm Voice.
Yeah, not exactly Mr. Calm Voice. However, I think it's because he's lived through it and he knows what the risk is.
I'm here, by contrast, to be soothing and reasonable and Mr. Likeableness. Not quite Mr. Rogers, but more like that than Mr. Horowitz. And with this book, Backbone Colorado USA, I'm trying to offer Colorado neighbors, families, and these busy moms you're aiming at a resource to get better informed on the issues and help their kids and families and neighbors be better informed on the issues so that we can defend this American miracle of freedom and prosperity.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing we want to make sure is that everybody knows this country, we are united. We're a melting pot, and we celebrate that we have people that come from all different parts of the globe, and we're not all the same. We are individuals, and because we're individuals and because we live in a free country, we are able to create so much value for other people's lives, and that is why we create wealth for ourselves, because we do it by serving rather than by seizing. And I just wanted to ask everybody out there to join us on Monday at the Martin Luther King Parade. We're going to be joining our good friend Casper Stockham, and we're going to be at Josephine and Colfax Avenue for a honk and wave, and then joining the parade at 10:45. So come on down at 9 o'clock on Monday for the MLK parade, because just like Martin Luther King Jr. said, we are all the same, and we want to be judged by the content of our character, not by the color of our skin. America is full of immigrants. We are all in this together, and we want to make sure that we're in this together, and that we appreciate
each
other.
I love that you're doing that. Yeah. Hope to see you down there.
So come join us. And then next week, we're going to go a little bit further into this whole socialism thing. Bernie Sanders says it's a good thing. A lot of people have the bumper stickers on their car. So let's take a look at it. Are we already heading towards socialism in America? Are there any new deals or anything like that might have come down the pike, or any that are going to be introduced this year, say in Colorado or America? Think about single-payer health care. Either way, join us next Thursday here on 560 KLZ. This is the AmeriChicks signing off. Have an awesome week.